Hi everyone, it's Tim here again, and today is the day. Virtual tickets are now available for Piano Pivot Live 2020. As I mentioned in the last podcast, we've realized that with so many listeners, blog readers, and members spread all across the world, we've been getting more and more requests to offer a way for people to experience the action and inspiration that is Piano Pivot Live, but they can't make it to Australia in January for whatever reason. So after chatting to my team about how we can help all of you guys and lots of discussion, we've put together our virtual ticket offer for Piano Pivot Live. We're calling it our Piano Pivot Live Virtual Lounge. And if you get a ticket, you'll have access to fully edited professional multi-camera video recordings of all our keynotes, our workshops, plenary sessions, interviews, and live teaching, and plenty of bonus materials and downloads, including the Delegate Handbook and audio files, so that you can listen and participate just as you could if you were there live. You'll have a full year in which to enjoy access and can refer back to any of the sessions as many times as you want during that period. Now, please note that we're not live streaming the conference. When you buy your virtual lounge ticket, you are not going to be sitting there live watching, mainly because it's not likely to be at a very good time of the day if you're not in Australia. But what you're going to get instead are professionally recorded videos that will be available within 4 weeks of the conference finishing, after we've edited and finalized them and put the PowerPoint presentations together with them and made them look amazing. All virtual ticket lounge holders will be emailed when those doors are finally opened. Now, virtual full price lounge access will be $129 US, but we're currently running an early bird promotion where you can get your 1 year access pass for just, wait for it, $79 US. That's significantly less than 10 hours per hour of amazing content from some of the world's best speakers. This is an absolute bargain, so don't miss out. Get your discounted virtual lounge access pass for Piano Pivot Live at pianopivotlive.com. This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by Tanara Music Practice Platform.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Well, welcome back everyone to the last episode of Season 3, 2019 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show. And if this is your first time here, thanks heaps for tuning in. It's exactly 7 weeks today until Piano Pivot Live. And as you heard at the start of this episode, we have just launched our virtual lounge passes. So make sure you go and grab them today at pianopivotlive.com. And for those of you joining us live at the event, because there's no doubt that it is going to be an experience unlike any other. And there are lots of things going on that won't unfortunately be able to be captured by the virtual ticket holders. Things like our incredible exhibit hall, our Thursday night social, evening social event with some of the performers we've got happening, things like that, that you can only experience there live. I just wanted to remind you that as well as the great promotions that we have, we've got the Kawai digital instrument that's being given away to one of our lucky delegates. But I also wanted to remind you that discount accommodation at Ridges Hotel finishes on the 22nd of December. So if you do want a discounted room, including breakfast, then you do need to get your ticket before the 22nd of December if you're planning to stay at Ridges, which is the hotel where we are running the event. Of course, you can stay anywhere after that, but the price will be more than double the current discount that we have. So guys, get your ticket, grab your hotel room before the 22nd of December and treat yourself to an early Christmas present. I thought it would be fun to end season 3 of the podcast with another one of my composer spotlights, which feature conversations with some of your most cherished composers and arrangers, delving into their background, teaching, and thoughts on creativity and composition, how they've come to be doing what they're doing, and how they create their amazing works that we love so much. Previous discussions with the likes of Kevin Olsen, Carol Matz, Dennis Alexander, Pamela Wedgwood, and Irina Guerin, to name a few, have always been some of the most popular episodes each season. So today, I thought we'd continue that tradition with another very well-known artist who I've wanted to have on the show forever. She's finally with us. I'm so excited to introduce you to her. Today's show notes and full transcript are available now at topmusic.co/episode180. My guest today is going to be well known to every music teacher and almost needs no introduction. She enjoys creating motivational piano pieces that foster her students' understanding and love of music. She graduated from the University of Illinois with a bachelor's degree in music education. She later received a Master of Arts degree in piano performance from Minnesota State University. An active church pianist and accompanist, she has also held the position of church music director. In addition to teaching piano in her private studio, which we'll unpack today, her music teaching experience includes 20 years of public school and 2 years at the university level. A dynamic clinician and innovative composer, my guest is in great demand at conventions and workshops for piano teachers across North America. She resides in Minnesota with her husband, Jeff, and she joins me today. Welcome to the show, Melody Boba.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity to come on your show, Tim. It's a great honor.
The honor's all mine because I've wanted to interview you for some time. I actually got the chance to see you in action at MTSC a couple of years ago. And just loved seeing your masterclass because it was so caring and supportive. And of course, all the students are playing your fantastic music, of which I'm also a bit of a fan. So I put together some exam books here for the Australian Music Exam Board and chose a number of your pieces for them. And I have to tell you, one of my favorite pieces, because I'd be interested to know if it's one of yours as well, and that's Midnight Ride.
Oh, yes.
It has been such a winner for students in my studio. Have you had a good feedback about that particular piece around the world?
Yes, yep. Most of those Busy Teens books have been pretty well received. So, and that one in particular is fun. Yeah, it's very fun.
Yeah. Well, we're going to dig into some of your music a little bit later. But firstly, I would be really interested to know what a week in the life of Melody Boba actually is like these days. Are you teaching? Are you presenting all the time? Are you just chilling out on a beach with a cigar?
Oh, that is a very rare occasion that I would chill out. But yeah, I can tell you a little bit. My day, actually, every day begins very early, about 6 o'clock, and I enjoy writing music in the early morning. I work on any original compositions or arrangements or things that I have for projects. And then around 2:30, I head into town, which is about 12 miles away. And I teach at a community center where I have a studio. And I'm usually teaching from about 3 to 8 at night or 9. That's Monday through Thursday. And then oftentimes I'll get on a plane early Friday morning to travel to a teacher group or a convention or, you know, just to give music workshops and presentations. But if I'm home on the weekends, there's nothing I love more than writing music. And so it's a very busy but fulfilling life.
Wow. So even on your weekends when you don't have to teach or present, you're still engaged in composition.
Well, I just love it so much. Yes, I really do.
Wow. And do you tend to spend more time composing or do you also do arranging?
You know, it's about, I'd say it's about 60-40. I mean, there's times when I have many projects for arranging, and I love that too. But I think a little bit more on the original composition end, yes.
Mm. And look, we're all the listeners out there are so thankful for all the music you've created because there would be very few listeners who haven't used one of your pieces at some stage in the past. So thank you very much for all the hard work you put in because we love your
music. That's so nice. Thank you.
So I'd be fascinated to hear a little bit about your own experience of piano lessons when you were a child. Were they quite traditional or were teachers already encouraging your creativity when you were a girl?
Well, I began lessons early, like 5 years old, mainly due to the fact that I was playing my older brother's pieces by ear from about age 3 on, and that didn't bode well. But my mom thought I'd better have some formal training, but I was so I loved playing so much. This is just crazy for when I tell my own students this and people this, but when I was a little girl, just 6, 7, 8 years old, you know, it would be summertime and all the kids would want me to come out and play. And she'd have to say, "Melody, quit playing the piano and go outside." And it was, so that's just something that rarely occurs, but I just loved it so much. And
if only we got the chance to say that to our own students these days.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I had some really kind and wonderful teachers over the years, but I have to say the composition, improv, especially playing by ear, you know, I'm a little older, you know, and so that generation was something that really never came up at lessons and was not encouraged. So I would say that my lessons were quite traditional.
Okay. And so you said you were, even as a little girl, you were playing by ear, playing your brother's pieces. Did it come therefore quite naturally? Were you quite attuned to hearing things and being able to play them?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'm interested now to connect that with your own teaching. And you say that, I got the feeling that you're sort of commenting on that times are changing and maybe we're starting to do a bit more creative and play by ear things in lessons. You're still teaching a lot of students by the sounds of things. Just quickly, what age and levels are the students that you're teaching at the community college?
Oh, well, it's actually a community center. I'm sorry. It's like a community center in this town where I teach. So it's right. Not a community college. Okay. And so I have little ones from about the age of 6 all the way through to adult. So I've got elementary, and I've got middle school, I've got the junior high, high school, and then I've got adults. And so it's a wonderful assortment and variety, you know, of students that I just love.
And about how many students all up, Melody?
Well, I hover around 40. Now, there were times when I was up to 70, and that's teaching Monday through Saturday type thing. And I just got so busy traveling, you know, with the composition stuff that I just had to pare it back a little bit. So I basically teach just 4 days a week, about 10 students a day, you know, which is just perfect.
I think it's a remarkable amount of teaching that you're still doing, given how much music you're composing and how much presenting you're doing. I think you must be very busy.
Oh, yes. It's all good, though. It's all good.
That's great that you enjoy it. Just coming back then to connecting your own lessons to the way that you teach now. Now that you have experienced your own lessons that were quite traditional, but you really enjoyed the playing by ear, and now that you're a composer, has that changed the approach that you use with your students? And if so, in what way is it different?
Well, I value the gift of playing by ear. It was not encouraged definitely in when I was growing up to be able to play by note, you know, play, read the music and all, but I'm finding myself too, if I have students that tend to have a good ear like that, that I will allow them to do a little bit of that, but then also focus in on the note reading as well. So we do a little bit of both, you know. I could say, well, you can play, I can play it for you and you can play it, or, you know, you can do something that you'll use your whole life, which is to read the music. But I don't totally discourage the student that can play by ear or likes to use the ear as well, because that's a gift too.
And do you work with your students on helping them compose if they want to? Do you bring that out in any activities?
Well, I'll tell you what I do. Every now and then when I have a group lesson, especially, I'll have all the kids pass out manuscript paper. I'll talk a little bit about composition. I might have a student, an older student that has done a little composition, speak to them as well. This is how I do it. This is how, you know, if it comes to me, whatever. And we'll try a little exercise in composition. I think there's a question coming up that's similar to that, so I can wait for that. But just to see if there's interest, because if they don't at least try it, if they don't at least experience it and try it for themselves, they'll never know, oh, I really do like the composer. Oh, that is something I'd really like to investigate further. But if for the students that say, you know what, that's just not for me, I don't force them. I don't spend that extra time because they're not interested in it, you know. But I do make the time for the ones that really want to, yes.
Great. And we might unpack that a little bit more about what you actually do. Can you remember what helped you decide to become a teacher? Was there a particular teacher you had or an experience? What made you go, I'm going to teach piano?
Well, as far back as I can remember, really, I wanted to be a teacher. I love going to school. I love learning. I really enjoyed a good number of my teachers over the years. And I wanted to be an inspiration to kids like they were to me. Really, I first began teaching in public school. Actually, I taught music at the elementary and middle school, junior high, taught at the university for a couple of years. But all of that time, I was also teaching private piano as well, which I loved. And I don't know, it's just a great joy to help kids learn and grow musically. And I've just really loved being a teacher.
So when did you first start composing? What age were you?
Whoa, I hate to tell you, Haldo, I was pretty old, yeah. I tell you, I had always been a church musician, so I'd arranged a lot of sacred pieces to use at church, but I really had never actually written any original piano music ever. And it was in about, I'd say the spring of 1994, I just had a tune in my head that wouldn't go away, and it was kind of a shock because I never thought of doing any original composing really. But I jotted down some ideas and I developed it into a piece. I dedicated it to one of my students that I had at the time. And a few of my colleagues and really my husband encouraged me to send it off for publication. They said, gee, you know, that's really pretty good. And so that's how I started. So I would say like 1995.
Wow. Okay. And so what, can you remember the name of the piece?
Yes, it was that very piece called The Irish Suite that was published by Willis Music, and it's still sold today. And it's just a three movement suite, very Celtic flavor, with a first movement called Sunrise and a romantic second movement, Afternoon Dreams, and a real frolicking third movement called Evening Reels. And, yeah, that was the jump start to that.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And do you look back on some of those early compositions and kind of wince when you go, oh goodness, that was so bad compared to what you're doing now? Or do you actually look back on it and go, actually, that wasn't too bad?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't ever look back and have any regrets or, oh, I can't believe I did that or that. I think there's a shelf life maybe for everything, and that as you go through time that certain things might change a little bit as far as what kids, you know, enjoy. Of course, the classics remain, I'm sure. But, you know, as far as maybe what their interests are, and you've labeled a title something that has to do with, well, skateboarding, let's just say, or whatever, you know, and things kind of change that way. But no, I look back on them as maybe, you know, good for the time that it was. So.
Yeah. Has anyone ever connected the fact that you've got like the most perfect first name for someone who's a composer?
Oh, yes. You know, people ask me that all the time. Is it a
you wouldn't have been a very good butcher, would you?
You know, people ask me that all the time, if it's a stage name or something, and it's not. It and I wish I had a real, you know, inspirational or soulful message for you there. But as far as my parents, they had went to Gone with the Wind, you know, years ago, and my dad had told my mom, if we ever have a girl, I want to name her Melanie. Or my mom said that. I'd like to name her Melanie because she liked it, the character in that show. And my dad said, well, how about Melody? That's very different. And that's really how it came about.
That's very serendipitous, really. So you mentioned that your first composition was picked up by Willis, I think you said. Can you tell us about the process? Because I know you're with Alfred now, and I don't know if Alfred bought Willis or if they're still two separate companies. Can you let us know the process of how you got to become a published composer?
When you have a piece of music, I would just say if somebody had a piece of music that, or several pieces that they would like to have them consider being published, probably don't just, I kind of just sent mine out to a variety of publishers and Willis picked it up. But I think that it's really good nowadays to make contact. Let's say if you go to a big convention, like you said, you were at MTAC or MTNA or other conventions that are held, you know, around the world. And if you meet with a person like an editor or whatever from a company and just say, I have this music, I would really love to, if you could carve out some time that I could talk to you and have you listen to some of it. I think a more personal approach like that is better. Mm-hmm. And as far as the publishing with Alfred, I've just really appreciated being with them because they have an incredible focus on educational piano music, and they have given me so many opportunities to solos and duets, trios and quartets in one hand, and lots of arrangements in Christmas, popular, jazz, sacred. You know, I've just really enjoyed all that they have allowed me to do. And but yeah, for the person who just wants to get a start, I would just say to make a personal contact. And then there's also, you know, more and more people that are self-publishing. So that's an option too. So
I'm super delighted that Tanara is supporting this season of the podcast and wanted to take a minute to tell you what they offer. Tanara creates an inspiring community for music teachers and students throughout each week. We know that apps don't teach quality music. Teachers do, and Tanara can make your teaching even more engaging. Help your students discover the difference effective practice can make. Tanara is available on mobile, tablet, and desktop. So head to tanara.com, that's T-O-N-A-R-A.com, and sign up for a 30-day free trial, or head to your respective mobile store on your device and download the app. Let Tanara create happiness in your studio today.
So I'm glad you brought up the educational side of things, because I wanted to ask you whether the pedagogy of your pieces is something that's in the forefront of your mind while you're composing. So are you kind of thinking, oh, what can I give a student that's going to help with this aspect? Or does my piece have enough dynamic and rhythmic interest to be of a certain level? Is that something that's in your mind as you compose?
Tim, it is always part of my compositional process, because since I am a teacher, I'm just constantly looking at this aspect. For instance, when I'm writing a piece at a certain level, I try to be very careful to include only what that level should incorporate as far as notes and note values and rhythms. Like you say, am I able at this level to add a one octave scale or possibly two octave? Can the scale be in thirds or sixths, or is that for a later level? Can it be in contrary motion? And then how about arpeggios, or could I introduce a particular articulation at this time? Especially taking into consideration of left-hand chords, or can they do octaves? What kind of key signatures, you know, pedal, you know, different things. And so, yes, I want to challenge the student's technique as well as musicianship at every level while staying within the parameters of that level, you know.
Yeah, that must be quite a challenge when you also want to do that, but also want to make it engaging and musical.
It is, and it gets a lot easier when you get up to, you know, the upper levels, early, mid, and intermediate level is, you know, not really as hard for me to write, because virtually anything goes when you get to that late intermediate. But the younger, the little ones, you know, it's sometimes challenging to make their pieces come alive with a very limited set of concepts.
And when you mention levels, for those who aren't in America who are listening, what levels are you referring to?
Oh, well, at Alfred, and as well as most of the publishers, they'll have book one is usually kind of an early elementary. And there we've got mostly single line notes, you know, and very sometimes not even phrasing, you know, very easy dynamics. We go up to level two. That's more of a mid elementary. You might add simple two and three note chords, maybe even an octave higher. You're going to add a little bit, maybe a little bit more sophisticated rhythms. But then by level three, we're at late elementary. And there we're going to have some block chords in the left hand. And you might be able to do a scale, definitely the pentascale, different things, and added key signatures. And then as you go up the levels, they're going to get into more, again, sophisticated concepts such as scales and arpeggios. And then, of course, key changes maybe, and tempo changes, and, you know, just more. So it feels like you can do more, you know, with the upper levels, but it's very challenging also to write at the lower level. So a lot of times what I love doing is with the little ones is to put just a really fun teacher duet part or, you know, so help bring it alive too.
And so what is your process for composing? Are you a chord-based person? Do you start with melody? Are you thinking lyrics? What's your approach generally?
Well, I always begin with a melody, it seems. I just
which is appropriate.
Yeah, I want to get a great tune going that will linger in a student's mind, you know, one that they'll enjoy hearing as they play, and even be able to hum or sing or whistle it away from the piano. I mean, it just gets in their head. And it's equally good to have wonderful harmonies and a rhythmic drive, but you just can't beat a glorious melody, really.
Mm. And so once you've got that melody, you then start thinking more harmonically and what might the left hand be doing to support that melody?
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then after that, as the piece takes shape, that's when you'll add your dynamics and phrasing and all of those kinds of things. Would that be right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. And yeah, I mean, I've mentioned Midnight Ride is just one of my favorites. There's many, many really engaging and exciting pieces. And you mentioned before the kind of rhythmic aspect of things. You've mentioned melody. Is there anything else that you think makes a really engaging student piano piece?
Well, when I write, I usually have a student in mind. And I'll ask myself, what does the student need that will, you know, challenge them? Or what do they actually need? I've had students that only want to play fast music, or they'll only want to play slow music, or they will only want to play in the center of the keyboard. So then they need to get out, you know, they need to get some arpeggios going. So, but basically, when I look at the student, I want a piece that will just really capture their personality and their heart and their inner spirit. You know, a student cannot resist playing something that allows them to shine and really takes their musical potential to the max. And I know as teachers, we all like finding those special pieces that make the student excited to learn and perform. And those are the kind of pieces I try to write for my own students. So.
Mm. Interesting. And so when you say you have a student in mind, are you thinking a student, just a type of student, or a particular student who you are teaching or who you have taught?
Well, I think both. I think that there has been times when there's been individual students, and then sometimes I think, well, maybe a student of this age would enjoy this, and I can also put in these technical things for them as well. So I guess a little of both.
Mm, great. And we've mentioned at the start, you do go around and present lots of workshops to teachers around the country. What do you think are some of the important things piano teachers should be including in their lessons to encourage their creativity and to encourage more melody bobas to be created and to explore composing?
Well, you know, improv is definitely something that teachers can do. Many of the methods today offer opportunities for improv, you know, in the lesson books and stuff, which is wonderful. But you can also have the students, for instance, they're working on a piece of music, have them create their own intro or come up with an alternate ending or change up something in the piece or change the key. Just begin in small steps to put their own ideas into action. Because I will have students that they'll be playing one of my pieces and they'll say, I'm wondering if you might like this ending a little bit better, you know, and they'll play something completely different. And I'll always welcome and listen, you know, to their ideas. And granted, I won't always agree with them, but it's fun for them to be thinking, you know, creatively, and they're thinking, oh, I think it should end this way. And so those are just some little things that they could do right at the lesson, you know.
And what, I know this is a bit of a tough question for composers, but what could you name your three top compositions that you've written that you just really love when you hear students play them and enjoy them?
That was kind of hard. I tell you, I don't know if people have heard of the Grand Solos for Piano, but Book 6, I actually like playing through that entire book. There's some really bold sounds, like in a piece called Dragonfly and Vals Dramatico, and then there's a romantic piece called The Keepsake and jazz sounds of Evening Snowfall and Jazz and Java. So there's quite a nice variety in that book. But I also like the various rhapsodies I've written, especially my newest one is called Dramatic Rhapsodies for the Early Advanced Student. And then there's a couple of romantic ones that I just like to play through. One of them is Stargazer. It's found in Book 4 of the Perfect 10 series, and Rain on the Lake, which is found in book 5 of that Perfect 10 series. And so, yeah, there's a lot of favorites. I don't know. It would be hard.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. I remember your grand one hand solos. I've used those books a lot. They're just great to have on hand when students break their arms and things like that. Are there any particular series that you've got more great feedback about than others that spring to mind?
Well, the grand, you know, that grand blanket that has solos, duets, trios, court, and the one hand and Christmas. That's been kind of a mainstay. The Perfect 10 is nice because it has original pieces from Baroque and classical, Romantic and Contemporary, but then it has 6 added pieces in blues, jazz, ragtime, and Latin, ballad, and showstopper. So there's a lot of different variety in those particular books. Then you've got The Busy Teens, which has that whole concept of goal setting and different things, which are good. And then my latest one is called Solo Extreme, and that's books 1 through 6 as well. And they are just, they're just like unique technical challenges in each piece that are, extreme in some nature. It might be the dynamics, or it might be the speed, or whatever. And as far as one that I could settle in on, I don't know. I don't know exactly which one, you know, would have is like, you know, better or anything, but they all have certain characteristics, you know, that are.
Yeah. Hopefully teachers listening can contribute their own thoughts on either our show notes page or on social as to what their favorite ones are, and we can share them with you so you can find out. I'm interested to know, just listening to you mention all those different styles, ragtime, rock, funk, jazz, blues, classical, contemporary, how do you get the skills to write in so many different styles?
Oh, boy, that is a really good question. And my family, they're not particularly musical. My grandma played, my grandfather on the other side played violin. But we all listened to different music. So I grew up listening to different kinds of music in the house. My dad loved, you know, ragtime and the music of the swing era. And my mom liked orchestral pieces. Then I had an older brother liked Elvis Presley. You know, the second brother liked Dave Brubeck jazz. And then there was me, and I loved the classics. I mean, anything classical, I just loved. And then I have twin sisters younger than me, and it seemed like they really enjoyed pop tunes and stage tunes from Broadway, different things like that. And so when you grow up listening to a lot of different kinds of music, that was one of the points I was going to actually bring out too, when you asked about what teachers can do to get their kids composing in a studio. And one of them is just to listen to a wide variety of music played by really good musicians. You know, a lot of times you can listen to things, but is it really good? Is it really quality? And they can listen to a wide variety of styles, and that can help them in their composition, because they, I didn't know I could put that chord with that. Oh, that's a jazz chord. Okay. You know, and so if you listen to a lot of it, it gets in your head. And that's actually what has really helped me do all the arranging and do all this composition, is just listening to it for many, many years.
And being absorbed in it as your family was exploring it too. I can understand how that can play out. I remember my dad playing, he used to love reggae, used to like Spanish guitar music, and it does all filter in. I'm not a huge composer, so I haven't had the chance to put that into action, but I can see how that has an impact on a family. And a great thing for us as teachers to remind our parents of our students to immerse their children in as much musical experience as possible, even if that's just listening to music at home.
Absolutely. That was one of my points on that question too. And other things that they can do is, that teachers can do is encourage them to carve out a little time each day to create. You know that what people say, writers write always. Well, composers create, you know, if they allow themselves to a little bit every day. you know, give them manuscript paper and have them write down even short motives. I tell my kids, even if your motive is three notes, you never know when a motive will develop into a complete melody and a really beautiful piece. It's true. I've had that happen. And also to encourage them to draw on things for inspiration. I mean, my greatest inspiration comes on walks when I'm walking by the lake, you know, and I just see the beauty of everything, a bird, the ocean, or various sounds on a keyboard, just the beauty of creation. And you never know what might lend itself to an idea if you begin to listen to sounds around them. And, you know, and then also just for the teacher to be a mentor. And a lot of times the kids will come and they'll might have a few ideas, but they're like, oh, they don't know how to develop a B section, or they don't know what chords to use. And so that's when the teacher can give wonderful ideas and direction for that.
And what would you say to the teachers who are hesitant, that they don't, you know, perhaps they're not really strong composers themselves? Can they still have an impact on their students in encouraging that creativity?
I think so. Again, like for me, I kind of put it out there every now and then. And then the students that kind of gravitate toward it, those are the ones that, you know, we maybe delve into it a little bit more. But I will give them a little idea. I've shared this too sometimes when I'm on workshops and stuff. But if a student has absolutely no idea where to begin with a melody, let's just say the teacher says, try to write, you know, four bars of something. And then they come back like, I don't know what to write. There's a little fun exercise that I use from time to time. It's quite random and it uses no creativity whatsoever, but it's kind of fun. It involves, it involves using the C scale. Okay. You give each note a number. For instance, C is 1, D is 2, E is 3, et cetera. Okay. The student then plugs in their phone number to the corresponding notes. So let's say the phone number. Yeah, the phone number is like, say, 218-3142. Okay. So the melody line becomes D, middle C, high C, E, middle C, F, and D. And if you would play that, it is not a bad start for a melody. it's kind of funny. And that honestly is not my idea. I was at a recital of composition students several years ago, and I asked the teachers, and they were saying, well, some of these kids did not know where how to start. So we told them they could use their phone number. And I thought, what a clever way, because all it takes is a spark, you know, for them to say, oh, wow, that is, oh yeah, I think I will continue with this. This is kind of fun. So anyway,
That's great. I mean, that's a great little nugget of information that teachers could take away and try out today in their studios. So really, thank you for sharing that. It's great. I wanted to ask you quickly about titles as well. Do you tend to think of titles before, during, or is it something you rack your brains for after you've finished to try and get something that suits and is exciting?
Oh, that is a really good question too. And I wish I had like a pat answer for that, but it just really depends. For instance, if I'm doing a piece called Rain on the Lake, you know, it's going to have to sound like raindrops, thunder. It's going to have big chords, lush chords, going to have, you know, so for that one, I actually started with that title because it happened to be raining at the lake that day. And but some of them are not as easy to come by. For instance, there's a piece in the Perfect 10 book for it, and it was just a really fast paced piece that was more of an exercise. And so I just named it Energetic Etude, which is fine. But some of them have, you know, a little bit more charismatic titles than others. So sometimes titles can be kind of hard at times, you know?
Yes, but so crucial too sometimes for students pre-engagement, I guess, of the piece. I find some students don't really mind what a piece is called, but others really get drawn to it. And if it's, you know, Castle Escape suddenly conjures up images, or the Skeletons Dance or something. It can really, impact the student's ability to perform a piece too, I think. Do you feel that as well?
Oh, yes, you're exactly right. Yeah. And so yeah, then it becomes kind of, you know, it can become kind of a challenge, but overall something usually comes, you know. And also you have to keep it age related too, you know. You can't call a trip to the ice cream parlor when they're 17 years old. So, you know, we have to keep it age related too.
Mm. And I imagine after 25 years or thereabouts of composing, you've got, you might be running out of ideas, or do you not find that?
Oh, well, not the musical side. I tell you, I just dream of music. I just love it so much. Yes, I would say titles are the most difficult part of those two things. But you know, generally something comes at eventually. So.
Mm. Well, one question I do like asking all the composers who I interview is, what other composers, dead or alive, do you admire and why?
Well, I got to say Chopin's number one, but I do like Grieg and Brahms and Liszt and Debussy. And I think I grew up just loving them so much. They're wonderful teaching pieces, but they offer great challenges in virtually every musical sense, and their compositions are. They're beautiful. They have gorgeous harmonies, interesting rhythms. Sometimes they're very intense, but sometimes they're heavenly, and they're just filled with everything that you would want a student to learn and love.
Mm. And I don't imagine you have a whole lot of time these days to practice for your own enjoyment, but what do you like to explore yourself when you get time to sit at the piano?
When I just sit down, I just love going through like the books I said before, like the Grand Souls book six, just go through a cover to cover, or one of my sacred books, or one of my jazz books, you know, or you know, jazz arrangements, I mean. And I still just love to play for my own enjoyment. I did a workshop yesterday or 2 days ago in Virginia Beach, and one of the teachers came up and said, look at this stack of music. And she said, this much is for my students, but this much is for me. And I thought, isn't that wonderful? Because that's what it's all about. It's just being able to play and enjoy your whole entire life. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yes. It's always a challenge finding that time when you've got families and full studios and things like that, but it is so important. I get a lot of enjoyment out of playing Chopin, trying to play the Chopin that I really want to play. And it does, it just brings so much joy that it's a good reminder, Melody. Thank you for reminding us that playing for our own enjoyment is so important in our busy lives. Well, look, I thought we might just finish with one question, and that's, if you could think of one big thing, one takeaway that you would like students to remember from today's interview, what would that be?
Well, I would just like everyone to know how grateful I am to continue to write educational piano music. I just consider it a great joy and a blessing to create compositions that will hopefully help students grow musically at the piano, and that they enjoy learning, performing the pieces, the parents like hearing them practiced, and that the teachers find them useful in their instruction. And that is my great joy and goal.
Well, we can only thank you for all that you've done and will continue to do. I don't know how you keep coming up with all the ideas, but it's wonderful to see the new releases come out, and it's great to be able to explore that when we're at conferences and things. So what's the best place for people to go to find out about the music that you're creating? Would it be the Alfred's website?
Yep. It could be the Alfred website, or I'm also on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. Well, look, Melody, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I know you're very, very busy. It's been an absolute pleasure connecting with you.
Oh, Tim, it was my pleasure and privilege. Thank you so much.
I look forward to seeing you at a conference soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, everyone, that is it for 2019 on the podcast. Although I want you to listen out next week, because there might be something special coming your way, but I don't want to talk too much about it. So just listen out and check your podcast app around this time in 1 week's time, and just see what we've got, because I think there might be one extra tiny little thing that we're going to share with you. I do hope you've enjoyed this season. It's been an absolute pleasure putting it together. And as always, I am delighted to hear the stories of how this podcast has impacted and affected you and your teaching and your students and the way that you go about what you do. It means a lot. And I'm always delighted to read reviews that teachers leave on both iTunes and on Facebook. So if you haven't yet done so and you've been enjoying this year's podcast, then I'd be delighted to read a review from you. You can head to topmusic.co/iTunes and you'll be able to find out more about how to actually leave a review on either iTunes or Facebook or anywhere else. And those things are always great for improving the rankings of shows on those platforms. And remember too, you can always listen on my own app. Just search for Tim Topham in any of your app stores and on Spotify or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. So that's it from me. As I mentioned, listen out next week. There's a little special something coming your way. But until next year, 2020, I'll be back after our Piano Pivot Live conference. So I can't wait to see lots of you at the event. It's shaping up to be a seriously amazing and one-of-a-kind event. So do make sure you get there if you can. And if you can't, remember that those virtual tickets are now available. Head to pianopivotlive.com. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Christmas and New Year, and I'll see you either at the event in January or in your earbuds sometime next year. Bye-bye. Now, just before you go, if you enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts from around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams. Whether that's about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home or hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more information on how to join us inside the Inner Circle today, head over to timtopham.com/community, and we'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.